Talking today with Mike Schulte from the Oklahoma Wheat Commission. Mike, let's talk maybe first of all about wheat crop conditions. I know that you talked to your commissioners, you talked to a lot of other wheat producers on an ongoing basis, and there's just a lot of worry right now about the status of this 2013 crop. It just doesn't seem like it's kind of limping along.
Well, you know, we do have a lot of concerns because we've been hit hard with a lot of different scenarios out there right now in the field. To begin with, you know, when producers planted, there was no moisture at all in the state. It was dusted in. We got erratic stands from the beginning. In many places, the crop didn't even emerge until late December, and some places up in northwest Oklahoma, the first week of February. So we already know with the emergence coming that late on, generally, that yield potential is greatly reduced going into a crop season. And then looking at the stands that were out there, you know, just did not have the tiller capability that we've had in the past because we haven't had any moisture until late in the year. And then we have a root system that's just not very well developed. And I think that not only in Oklahoma, this goes on in West Texas, on up into West Kansas, up into Nebraska. We're really seeing the same thing. And so producers, I think, in Oklahoma, but all over, have great concern for this wheat crop.
Now, what universally across the Great Plains, where you just have a real shortage of topsoil and especially subsoil moisture.
Yeah, you know, no subsoil moisture at all whatsoever out there. And with the rains this past week, you know, that certainly is something that producers were wanting and, you know, hopefully was going to be able to help us. We'd had some rains a couple weeks ago, too, that have really greened things up. But we were going to have moisture from here on out now to be able to make this crop. And now with the late freeze scenario that we've seen, you know, there is great concern to producers because with the first freeze we saw on March 26th, we already are seeing damage in southwest Oklahoma taking place. I think a lot of times we tend to be overly concerned, but with the damage that we're seeing from March 26th in those regions, you know, we're seeing when they open the heads up or seeing the heads, it does look like that 50 to 75% of the head is damaged in areas down there. And now that we're 2 weeks further into the growth cycle, in southwest Oklahoma, we now had this last freeze here on Tuesday and then Wednesday. Some of the wheat in those areas was headed out, the wheat that had survived. And so I think producers really do have great concern down there. Here in central Oklahoma, as I was looking around, and we're still in the pre-boot stage in a lot of places. And one thing that helped us the first night was is that we did receive moisture. And so there was a lot of ice on the plants, so it acts as an insulator. But, you know, the second night, I think the verdict is still going to be out on that. And it's going to take, you know, 6 to 7 days to really see what that damage is. But I think that no doubt we're going to have some damage occur.
I know that in talking to Dr. Jeff Edwards, our extension wheat specialist, he thinks that if we were able to get somewhere close to an average crop, that would be a pretty exceptional achievement.
Yeah, you know, 2 to 3 weeks ago as I was driving around, I still had hope that maybe we would have a little bit over average crop. But I think with the scenarios that we've been given right now, I think certainly next week this time we're going to know what we're really looking at as far as southwest and central Oklahoma. The other concern I had, you know, if we turned off really hot and dry without the moisture, I always felt like the crop was going to burn up because we just didn't have that root system established. So I think, you know, to say we were going to have an average crop, you know, would be wonderful at this point in time. But I certainly think that it's probably not going to be our strongest crop year for Oklahoma.
Let's talk about a little bit some of the things going on with the U.S. wheat and some of the efforts you've got on behalf of Oklahoma wheat producers to market their crop. U.S. wheat obviously is our international arm. They're working with buyers on an ongoing basis overseas.
Yes, and I am excited to say that we are going to have 3 trade teams coming in that we are partially funding with U.S. wheat this coming June. They're coming a little bit later than what we had expected in the year. We were hoping to spread them out, but since we had late allocation of MAP and FMD funding, it has been harder to get these things planned. But we do have a trade team coming in from Nigeria. We have one coming in from Ecuador, and then we also have one that is coming in from Israel. And we had an exchange program set up with Israel a year ago through the Oklahoma Jewish Federation that allowed us to take some producers over to Israel with all different areas of agriculture. And so when we went over there, we were able to make those connections. And now we're looking at putting a procurement course together in the end of June with Oklahoma State University, and then hopefully we can get them here to source some of our grain through different parts of the state.
What sort of things would they be shown at OSU?
Well, you know, we have a wonderful cereal chemistry lab at the Food and Agricultural Products Center. And so they'll be looking at a lot of testing and analysis with the way that the crop can be milled, with extraction rates. And then also they'll be looking at bake times and performance measures of what they can use with hard red winter wheat. You know, they're a really technical, savvy buyer. Here recently, we've really had to compete with the Ukraine market with them just because of closeness to proximity. But when the Ukraine and Russia put on their export bans, they always come to America. We have always had that relationship with them where we do generally sell them at least 25 million to 26 million bushels of wheat a year coming out of the hard red winter wheat producing areas of Texas and Oklahoma. But we would still like to be able to always have that door open and be able to facilitate even more trade with them based on what we have with our quality parameters.
Obama administration has proposed in their 2014 fiscal year budget some sweeping changes when it comes to food aid. And I know that is a concern to a lot of agriculture, including U.S. wheat.
Well, yeah, you know, I think a lot of producers have this misconception out there about food aid programs, and sometimes they feel like that we need to be taking care of our own here in the United States. But one thing I like to remind producers of, that those programs were set up to help foreign countries in their time of need, but also were set up with the mindset that American agriculture could help, you know, feed the world. And so there has been drastic changes that have been proposed through the Obama administration, and now it's going to be up to Congress to decide what they're going to want to figure out. But especially with the Title II programs, in the past, it now only provides more than $400 million for development programs to USAID. And so we're looking at a $50 million amount that's probably not going to be recouped through monetization programs, which means that we are not going to have $50 million worth of commodities moving to these countries during their time of need if something should happen. They're looking at going on to strictly a cash basis and trying to procure the food locally or regionally in these areas. And there is just great concern for that when you look at these programs, because a lot of times the areas where these disasters are happening, they're not going to have the advantage to have the food necessary to feed these people during their time of need. So there's a lot of questioning. Also, you know, just with the currency issues, credit constraints, one thing about the monetization programs that have been helpful in the past is that it's allowed us to set up credit opportunities to be able to help these countries during their time of need. And if we move to a cash basis, I think that's going to be a lot harder to do. It's going to be a lot harder to administer. And then we're also going to have to really question to make sure that there's no corruption going on with these programs and that actually these people are being taken care of during their time of need. One of the things that we are a little bit excited about is that they are shifting the $1.1 billion from Title II International Disaster Assistance still into these programs, but now they're only going to say that 55% of that's going to be used for procurement, which means that 55% of that's going to be used just for commodity use. And so when you look at that, the guarantee is much less in amounts today, and we're looking at only $600 million going to commodities compared to the $1.7 billion that has been used for emergency and non-emergency use during these time of needs. And so, you know, we've really been fighting hard on this issue. Some of the other organizations have said that, voluntary organizations have said that, you know, the food has not been received in a timely manner during the time where maybe a disaster has occurred. But we have always taken great strengths to work with the maritime industry to get that food there in a timely fashion. And I think that we know there's some misconceptions with the administration that they think that these programs are used to maybe line the pockets of producers here in the central U.S. And, you know, nothing could be further from the truth. These programs were set up 60 to 70 years ago because agriculturalists wanted to have these programs in place in order to enable us to market wheat to these countries in their time of need, but, you know, maybe also create a market for us in the future. And one thing that I think that we have to really look at with these programs is that we've seen it time and time again that the economic development that takes place to these countries, once we have shipped food to them in their time of need, we see economic development that starts to occur. Some of the studies go in to show countries like Mozambique, where there was concerns that there would be market disruption. Well, Mozambique, because of their climate and their terrain, is never going to be able to grow wheat. We see an increase in flour milling once wheat is shipped to those countries, and then it does create economic development for these countries in their time of need. And then in the future, it has the potential to be a market for U.S. wheat. also, you know, we've seen this time and time again work with South Korea and Mexico. Mexico used to use food aid programs all the time, you know, probably 50 to 60 years ago. And now they're our largest buyer of Oklahoma hard red winter wheat. So we need to keep these programs in place in order to be moving the wheat to these countries. And at the end of the day, I think that that's my goal. That's U.S. Wheat's goal. And that's what we continue to work on.